So welcome everybody. This is the Bad Dance and Practices community call December 2015 session. And like mentioned before we started the recording, a lot of the people will be joining a few minutes late. That's relatively typical. So that's absolutely as expected. Today we will have a relatively typical setup. So I'm going to talk about roughly 30 minutes, hopefully not longer than that. And then there's a demonstration or demo done by Patrick Rogers, who will hopefully join on the call in a minute now. And then we're going to have an open question and answer and feedback session after that, because we wanted to actually have a discussion with the community for you guys to have an opportunity to participate on the future direction of the PNP as well. So we do have a few questions what we want to get an answer. But let's get started on the material, because it's relatively typical that I run late, unfortunately, on the on the introductions and summary of the month. So I want to make sure that that doesn't happen today. So let's get actually started. So typical agenda, like always within the Patterns and Practices monthly community calls, we'll start with a monthly highlights, a kind of a walk through what has happened during past month. We're going to have a look on the people and the list of people who contributed during last month. We do have, again, roughly 30 individuals who've been active by contributing and helping the community with the Patterns and Practices guidance. We'll have a look also on the roadmap, so what's coming up with the January release of the Patterns and Practices guidance, and that contains updates all around the individual things and elements what we're having within the PNP repositories. And there's, by the way, Patrick, thank you for joining. I was just slightly worried that I didn't see you on time. Bad boy. No, just kidding. And then obviously Patrick is going to do the demo, which around the SharePoint core, core.sharepoint sample, which is one of the, well, it's actually the only new sample in the main PNP repo. And we're going to talk about that one slightly later today as well. There was a webcast on that one released yesterday, Monday. So if you go to the dev.office.com, there's a webcast where we are having a discussion with Patrick around the performance recommendations around JavaScript implementation with SharePoint. But let's actually get going on the more, let's say, general topic. So what I wanted to do this time, typically we have that map here, and people can maybe tag themselves on a map where they're actually calling from. But just to get some interactivity on the calls, I wanted to test the polls, and that's actually that one. So let's have a look on the let's have a look on how people are calling in. And typically what we're seeing in here that the majority of the callers are calling from Europe. Well, not majority. We have North America quite heavily also included. Then in Australia or Asia, it's pretty much nighttime, so people can answer the question. And that was fast, actually. We have 24 persons already answered on the well, there's quite a few persons answered on the call, 36 persons answered on the call already. And just a reminder, please do mute yourself during the call. We can open up the discussion after the call. So I'm going to, there's some background noise coming from somebody, and I'm going to mute that one. That wasn't the case. Thank you. So we can see this is relatively typical divider within the calls. We have 39 answers, 24 are calling in, 25 are calling in from Europe, and then slightly less from North America. It is pretty early in the PST time zone, so it's understandable that it's usually the eastern side of the US who's calling in the PNP calls. So typical divider. Nobody from Asia or Australia, which is relatively rare. But anyway, moving back on the presentation, just wanted to test if this works, and seems to be working relatively well with this this course as well. So moving back on the slides, and let's wait a second. Slides to update. That seems to be updating quite nicely. So moving on the forward on the sessions. There we go. So a few things. There's always new people calling in this these calls. The PMP is really, well, the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, it's the, even the name is slightly confusing. This is not only for Office 365, this is also for SharePoint on-premises, but we concentrate on the SharePoint adding model in the on-premises. In Office 365, we absolutely want to now start growing the unified APIs, Office 365 APIs, and all of that stuff as well. But we've been heavily concentrating on the SharePoint adding model within the past actually 2 years or 1 year, depending on how do you count the life cycle of the PMP. And that's mainly because the majority of the core team members who are actively contributing on the core, on the samples and contributed on the samples are working day to day with large customers on a SharePoint adding model implementations. And that's really the reason why the material is mainly for SharePoint, but we are absolutely interested on growing the material for other elements as well, like the unified APIs in the future. So AKMS Office Dev PMP, and you land on the welcome page in the dev.office.com. Should be familiar for many of you. Whenever you're looking into some of the guidance and samples, what we're actually having, we do recommend you not to actually directly go to the GitHub. You can go to the GitHub if you're familiar with the GitHub and the structure. We do recommend you to go to dev.office.com and choose resources and then patterns and practices. And there's sample/guidance is the options. And this way you are able to then filter down on and use the search and try to find the relevant information for you. So you can, for example, search branding or set site provisioning or ECM or governance and filter down the options based on the search criteria. So it's a really, really great tool to have a look on. Good. The other stuff, what has happened during the past month, there's some new PMP webcasts. We started the Patterns and Practices webcasts back in October, around mid to October. And the whole point of these ones is that we actually show you, do our videos. We release a blog post in the dev.office.com. We'll do a video in a Channel 9 PMP video blogging section or video blog. And then we talk about the individual topics around PMP guidance or SharePoint adding model or Office 365 or Unified API and so on. And these are typically, we're always targeting the 30 minutes, but they always go quite long. So some of them are roughly 50 minutes, some of them are 45 minutes. Good. There are some audio issues for somebody, but for the majority of the people, audio seems to be fine. Well, those people who can't hear me can't hear that I'm noticing that the audio is not fine. So during this month, there's actually, well, it slightly depends. There's a 5 new webcasts. So Introduction to Office Dev PMP Partner Pack. That's something that we released already back in November. And there has been improvements based on the community contributions on the documentation and some of the code. There's a JavaScript development patterns with SharePoint with me and Patrick Rogers. It's a good session around how do I actually do JavaScript development in a SharePoint in an easy way. Because quite often it feels like it's really difficult to do JavaScript development with SharePoint, but Patrick is showing how that can be done easily with a loader pattern, so to say. So a really great video to have a look on. Branding SharePoint using adding model techniques is a relatively old topic, but it really concentrates on tries to explain the justification why you should not use a custom master page. But at the same time, as an example, in the case of custom master page, it's absolutely supported in Office 365. And then the key point is to understand what would happen if I'm using a custom master page in Office 365. Then we did a session on asynchronous operation with in Office 365 using Microsoft Azure Web Jobs. Extremely powerful pattern, and I would highly recommend everybody who's working with Microsoft Azure and Office 365 to have a look on that. There's a lot of additional, let's say, scenarios which we are building on top of that initial pattern, which is demonstrated during that webcast. And then the latest one is the JavaScript performance considerations with SharePoint development, and that's from this Monday, where me and Patrick are having a discussion around things to consider when you do JavaScript development. And it really comes down on the remembering the fact that even though the development is now happening on the client side, you still need to think about performance impact of your custom code. Badly written JavaScript can actually take a SharePoint farm down, which should be understandable, but quite often people don't actually realize that they can have a nasty impact on the SharePoint farm. Good example, I'm just, well, that sounded really horrifying. Badly writing JavaScript with badly written JavaScript in the front page of an intranet, which is a default welcome page for 20,000 end users, can actually have a relatively big impact on your SharePoint farm. So therefore, it's really important to understand when you're writing a JavaScript, what is good practice, what is bad practice, how to minimize those issues within your code. And Patrick is gonna do a demo on that one today as well. What else? Just an introduction, a reminder more. So if you go docs.com/officedevpnp, we have plenty of material there. So if you're interested on any of the stuff related on the PNP, there's like 30 different presentations. All of the webcast presentations, all of these monthly call presentations are released in this location as well. The PNP graphics presentation contains roughly 100 different slides and drawings for your for you to reuse, and you are more than welcome to reuse this material in any way you want. It's all, the PNP graphics presentation has been, as an example, downloaded already 2,300 times. And don't worry about it, just use the graphics. You don't have to send anybody an email to ask a permission. All of this stuff is for you to reuse in any way you want, in anywhere you want, and we don't really care. Good, some statistics for the December. So this is a relatively, well, we always do this in every single month, and this is giving the summary of the numbers. So the PNP repository, the main PNP repository, which is nowadays just one of the repositories in the GitHub, has been already forked for 1,166 times. And there's a slide coming up quite soon, which is showing the comparison of that one, that number comparing to other repositories in Microsoft GitHub. But that's a huge number. We absolutely never thought about growing to this big, and we're highly grateful for the interest of the community for the material. It clearly shows the need of this kind of a guidance and need of this kind of a reusable modules and components for people to consume. We closed or merged 1,313 pull requests. There's 277 closed issues in the PNP repos. We do absolutely know that there's quite a lot of open issues / enhancement ideas in the PNP repositories, which we need to tackle. It's a resourcing challenge, what we're trying to resolve gradually. For the past 2 weeks, there's more than 3,782. That's a pretty precise number for saying more than. But more than 3,780 unique visitors in the PNP master repo. That slightly goes down from November, but that's also understandable due to the holiday season in the US. So that's kind of understandable. The PNP site core is also slightly down than the PNP PowerShell is slightly down, but the amount that it's down is actually directly related on the holiday season in US. So if we would actually not have those holiday days during the past 2 weeks, the numbers would be slightly higher. NuGet packets have been downloaded 17,000 times more than Yammer Group is still growing, which is a nice thing. The Yammer Group is still by far the most active Yammer group in the Office 365 technical network. So people are helping each other, and the core team members, including me and few, well, Bert and Irvin and Paula and many, many, many others, are actively helping others in that Yammer group. And it's great to see that that Yammer group is actually showing the power of Yammer. So when there's a question, you can use the Yammer for asking the question, and then you can actually use the search to find answer for the mainly for the questions which have been already answered, which is really great. Good. Some numbers, the GitHub forks and pull requests are growing steady. That number isn't actually that heavily, let's say, increased. Well, it's growing steady. Visitors in a GitHub and in a Yammer group growing. The main reason for the, let's say, in quotes, massive leap in the unique visitors is that we changed our calculation metric slightly for the past 2 months, because we've been splitting the repositories to multiple repos. So now we are summing up the unique visitors within all of the repos, even though some of the unique visitors are exactly the same, but we don't get that metrics. So we need to somehow do the calculation still in the future. And then the Nuget download is steadily growing. There's that interesting leap. Is it from September to October? A significant leap of the downloads. But it's steadily growing, which means that the Nuget package, the core component Nuget package, is clearly showing value for the community as well. For those who are not aware of what is the BMP core component and the Nuget package, we will release a getting started Nuget video relatively soon, like a 10-15 minutes, which is showing what is a BMP core component, how does it work, how do you get access to it, and what is the benefit of doing that. And that's going to be released in the Channel 9 section of the BMP, which is aka ms/office-dev-bmp-videos. Some other numbers, because Microsoft is relatively number-driven company. This is something what personally I needed to do for my management. So we were comparing the BMP, the better Office Dev BMP, for other Microsoft organizational repositories in the GitHub. And it was actually really, really satisfying comparison. Because the BNP is ranks relatively high, especially if you're just looking at the GitHub repository forks. So we have as much, actually right now today, I think we just passed .NET runtime library. So the BNP has more repository forks than the .NET core runtime library, which feels absolutely amazing. ASP.NET MVC is slightly less than that, TypeScript or Entity Framework slightly less than none. To be fair, the looking just the number of forks doesn't actually mean, well, it slightly depends what the repository actually contains. Does it make sense for people to fork that repository or not? But it's an interesting number, and it's a number what we can get from all of the GitHub repositories. And the BMP absolutely ranks quite high in the comparison. The other kind of a chart, and this is a relatively complex chart, but this is comparing in the Office GitHub organization, the BMP is by far the most forked and repository. This is the left side of the chart. If we compare the BMP to Azure or Windows or Visual Studio or Windows servers, there's only, in the case of Azure, there's only two repositories which have more forks than the BMP repository. So the Office 365 Dev BMP actually ranks extremely high in the overall comparison within the Microsoft open source community and open source comparison. And the same applies if we are looking forks or if we are looking stars. So if you are just looking forks, we're in a top 10 with the BNP. If you are looking stars, it's a slightly different. We're in a top 20 still. In the Visual Studio, there's quite a few repositories which have more stars. But again, numbers, but we're a number-driven company, so we're using numbers to compare compare our success to the other ones. Moving on new stuff. So what did we actually release? Well, obviously there was the webcast videos, which we're releasing in a weekly basis, usually weekly basis. It's been a weekly basis until now. We'll see if we will do a weekly basis during the upcoming holiday season as well. As part of the December release, and this is actually a good thing, we only released the one new sample in the BNP guidance, which is the core.javascript, which Patrick Rogers is going to show later today as a demo within the call. Why is it a good thing? Well, it means that we have a relatively nice set of samples which are, well, which are showing Dunina capabilities. And we're exposing, at least from a SharePoint adding model perspective. So we can concentrate on adjusting and polishing and maturing up these existing samples rather than just increasing the number of samples. Because the BNP is not really about increasing the number of samples what you can download from a GitHub. It's more around getting the community and customers and partners and, well, communities, customers and partners, giving them valid samples and guidance how they can start doing SharePoint adding model, Office 365 API development, unified API development, so on. So that's the new stuff. What's interesting about the core of JavaScript is that this is one of the thinking of this one is that let's see if it actually is catching on. But there's quite a lot of people who would be interested on starting contributing in the JavaScript development. And we do have a core component for managed code. And this one is essentially the start of the core component for JavaScript. So there is a functions, a reusable functions in JavaScript for the JavaScript development. And like I said, Patrick is going to show those within 9 minutes, hopefully. Good. Other stuff in the December release, the core component, not a significant amount of changes, which again is an extremely good thing. There's general bug fixing and quality improvements. There's improved theme and compost looks handling, which we need to, by the way, have a still a look during December as well for the January release. We do have quite a lot of pull requests on that one. There's some improvements in the custom action handling. There's a better testing automation. We are already right now today doing daily builds with an automated unit tests for the core component, which actually we've been doing that since last August or something like that, and it has been set up by Bert Jansen. But that helps us on following up on if anything, any new pull requests which we're adding to the core component is going to break up anything within the deployments. In the PowerShell side, not a significant amount of new stuff, but there's overall quality improvements, changes, and additional options within the existing command lines. So Erwin is leading that one all the time actively as well. In the BNP provisioning engine, which is all about the remote provisioning, so moving people away from the feature framework and the web templates and site definitions because they do have a significant issues from a maintenance perspective. The BNP provisioning engine is part of the core component, and that's been evolving gradually as well. There's quite a lot of improvements which we didn't submit as part of the December release because we wanted to make sure that they are properly tested. So as part of the January release, which will happen, I think, in 4th or 3rd of January, there will be a significant improvement from a capability perspective from the provisioning for the provisioning engine, because there will be a new schema version for the serialization support, and that also drives the engine development. In the BNP partner back side, there was some small quote quality changes, not a significant changes. And then there was a lot of work done on improving the existing documentation based on the community input. So there was a lot of people who started using the BNP partner back, which was released as part of the November release. And then they started reporting problems of configuring that, which, by the way, isn't a super, super simple thing. Due to the fact that when you're doing a Office 365 API access using the app only tokens, that requires a slightly difficult setup. But the documentation has been now improved, and that's evolving gradually forward as well. And yes, Bert is mentioning a really good thing, which is on my roadmap slide as well, but it's already in Windows. So as part of the January release, the core component and PowerShell will be signed. So it will be strongly signed because there's companies where, in some companies, people cannot actually use code which is coming, hasn't been signed properly. So that's going to be part of the January release, and we're going to do some other modifications there as well. Good. One of the interesting things, and this is just an initial start on growing the BMP to a slightly new area, is that we released a new repository, and this really doesn't have that much significant content right now. But we released the BMP tools. And the BMP tools is something which is targeted more for IT pros and architects. And like you can see, the updated logo is Office 365 Patterns and Practices. It's not Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices. So this is more targeted for IT pros and architects to share scripts and other kind of tools related on SharePoint on premises or in Office related on Office 365. As part of the December 2015 release, we released two different things. This first one is the script, which is the SharePoint hybrid search configuration. And this is a script which will help people to set up the hybrid search configuration between the on-premises and SharePoint Online. And then the second one relates on SharePoint 2016, where the user profile synchronization is slightly changed. And there's a automated tooling and a code, which is a code which is helping to do the transformation from the existing user profile service application to this MimSync solution. Both of these are now part of the December release, and they will start growing and living their own life within the BMP tools repository. We're also looking into growing the script amount and well amounts of scripts and automation scripts inside of the BMP tools repository. The key reason why we wanted to do this is relatively simple. Quite often you need to do some scripting within your SharePoint farm. For example, how to enable load trust within your SharePoint farm, or how to enable some other things in your on-premises SharePoint farm, even for SharePoint add-ins. Putting those scripts inside of the main BMP repository didn't feel right. So creating this BMP tool repository will help us on having a location and logical location for this kind of a content as well. And we are getting few additional MVPs and a few additional internal people working on the IT pro and architect section as well. Cool. Thank you for your assistance. So this is the main list of or the for the external contributors within the December release. So in alphabetical order. So we do have again quite a significant amount of external people and community people contributing, mainly through pull requests and issue reporting, and also being active on the Yammer group. But I think all of these persons have been actually submitting pull requests, modifying existing code, modifying existing samples, core component, provisioning engine, and so on. And we absolutely, the whole program is highly dependent on the work what we do together with the community. So over there, there's the Arthur, there's Christopher, Irvin. Well, Irvin is a core team member. Irvin is always there. There's Daniel, who's always there. Henrik is in a call as well. Thank you, Henrik. And Henrik has been highly active. Ian has been highly active as well. James, Lars, Luis, extremely active in a Yammer site. Massimo Prota as well. Michael Shao, Martin Sandberg, Ole Christian, Ole Martin, Pascal Berger, Paolo from a core team member, Ruddy from a core team, and I saw you guys in the call as well. Excellent. Then we do have a one GitHub alias. It's kind of a people are submitting some of the pull requests, but they don't change their name in a GitHub, so we don't actually know who the person is. We do know their GitHub alias. So if you do that in a future in a GitHub, please remember to update your profile properly so we can give you credits. Ryan Aitz, Tim Hills, Tomi Taavela, and Victor Villain. A lot of the guys are not first-timers. They've been doing this for many months. So they're finding a small bug within the documentation. They find a small bug in the README notes. They find a small bug or bigger bug in somewhere. Then they submit a pull request for the benefit of others. And like I said, we're absolutely grateful for all of the work what these guys are doing, and what the other guys are doing in the future as well. From Microsoft time site, we have a typical set of the core team members like Anton, Bert Janssen, absolutely. Brian is in a call. Gaurav helped on the MimSync stuff. So Gaurav is the person who was actually working on the meme sync section. He's from a product group. Dan from a core team members, Frank, well, Kaurav, you're actually twice there. That's a small typo. This should be Craig, as I mentioned there as well. Jeremy Fake, everybody knows Jeremy. Kiki is working with customers and providing us content. Patrick is in the call. Ron, Sami, and Steve Walker is in the call as well. And, well, mentioning myself there as well. Good. Few things on the roadmap, and I'm again running out of time. I'm always doing that. I just can't keep this in a 30 minutes. So general release plan, provisioning engine. There will be obviously this typical stabilization and testing improvements. We do have quite a significant amount of pull requests queued up for the January release. We're looking into having a welcome-based extraction support, which means that when you're extracting or saving existing site as a template, the welcome page and the settings within the welcome page will be serialized and saved as well. So then it's actually matching the save site as a template capability. Multilingual support for templates is coming up. There's a search functionality is coming up, and there's a new schema version for the engine coming up as well with additional support, which relates on a bullet point around the samples and solutions. So before the January release, we will release a new version of the client-side object model APIs. So the client-side object model API is redistributable, and the NuGet, the official one, not the PMP one, the official Microsoft CSAM package will be updated. And obviously we are already targeting those new properties and new capabilities within the provisioning engine. There's some great stuff which will be finally resolved on the updated CSAM package. In a core component, signed component with an updated capabilities in a PowerShell, well, obviously that will start continue evolving with the signed commandlets and other updates. Sample solution, we're really starting targeting on the unified APIs, Office 365 APIs, and also the existing sample consolidation. And what that means is that we want to combine a lot of the existing samples to a more subset, well, or combined samples, because there's quite a lot of overlapping samples, and then there's simple samples which we could just as well combine to a slightly bigger one. And that's going to happen, or targeted to happen, by the January release. PMP tools continue evolving. PMP partner packs, let's see how that's evolving as well. ALM guidance and in the adding model and app model development work has finally started. For those who've been joining on our monthly calls, we've been talking about this one for what, 6 months? But we're always running out of time and resources to actually start that. Will it be part of the general release? We'll see. Will it be part of the, but actual work around that guidance has already started, which is already a good start, right? Good. Let's actually move to Patrick. So Patrick, you're in a call. Let's double check your audio.
Hello.
Excellent. Great audio, and feel free to take it away and steal the presentation.
All right, let me do that.
Show us code.
Trying.
I think it's...
All right, that should be on its way to everybody.
Not yet. Wait a second. Loading, at least for me.
Well, that's loading. Just to kind of follow up on some of the stuff Vesa was talking about, we've got, obviously, a very large number of samples across a lot of the libraries. And I know, at least for me, there's a lot of different spots I have to go to find some of the various JavaScript stuff that I know is there. And I know it's the same for the managed code, but I've been kind of focused on JavaScript a little bit lately. And so the idea kind of behind it was to start consolidating these things, one, to reduce just the total number of samples, two, to make it easier to find stuff, and then three, to start to make it easier to say, you know, just like we've got, as Vesa said, the core, you know, managed code package, start to introduce a core JavaScript package with the idea that possibly in the future this could become its own NuGet or something like that, but start that process now, and then, you know, through the input from the community, really start to grow that out in directions that benefit everyone in their projects and the work you're doing for your customers. So I'm going to kind of go over some of the stuff we talked about in a couple of the videos, but wanted to highlight a few different things during this call, and then kind of really open it up to you guys for some feedback through Yammer, how possibly you'd like to see this stuff grow, what sort of JavaScript things you all are encountering and trying to do, and where it would really be helpful, and that sort of thing. So without further ado, the first thing I wanted to show is that in one of the videos we talked about the loader pattern. And for those of you that haven't had a chance to check those out, what that is the idea that you want to minimize places that you need to make updates when things change. And through that, we came up with this kind of loader pattern. And you'll see two different implementations of it here. The top one works great for pages, and the bottom one works great for pages where the minimum download strategy is enabled. But both of these script blocks, you would embed one or the other. You wouldn't need to use both. But you would embed, we'll look at script two here. And you're going to embed that through the user custom actions. Here I'm using the root web. You could just as easily use the user custom actions in the site level. Both work just the same. But this is kind of testing, and it's been included in the project, this little test embedder, which is just this little console app to just kind of stick the script block into your test site. I use it all the time, and I figured maybe other folks would like to use it as well. So what you'll see in here is a call to the out-of-the-box function execute or delay until body loaded, and this helps us deal with the minimum download strategy. And then in the body of this, we're using the standard script on demand stuff to load a jQuery, and you'll note I haven't put any version numbers here, and then our loader file. And so you'll see here we're using PNP loader MDS. So that's what this does, is this just runs. It'll actually delete, since this is a test app, it'll just delete. It'll just delete any previous links. So if you make updates, it'll delete it for you, clean it up, and re-add it in. Options for error log, and we'll take a look at that. So that's kind of the embedder. And this is all it does. It's just a little test embedder. In the real world, this is something you'd probably embed during site provisioning using the provisioning engine or some custom provisioning code, something like that in the real world. So let's take a look up here at the files. You'll see there's a set of four loader files. There's two loaders and there's two loader MDSs. The difference here is, these are the ones used for the minimum download strategy scenario or not. And the difference between these two files is for development, you can use just the PNP loader MDS, and that uses the jQuery get script. And that's going to avoid file caching in the browser every time by appending a little timestamp when those files are loaded. But once you get to production, that's no longer the best performing or performant way to do it. So we've provided a cached version of this, which is actually going to use jQuery again, but with it caching enabled, so that once you're in production, these files are likely going to not change very often. So what we'll do is look at
Patrick, don't try to read the discussion. You can't do that at the same time.
I'm closing that now. So what that's going to do is keep the files cached. So for production, definitely use either of these cached versions of this loader. And then you'll see up in the loader here, you've got two variables. One is the URL base, and one is an array of the files we want to load. We'll go through each of these files, and this URL base points to, in this case, this localhost project. And you can get that from the F4 properties. I've used the enabled SSL and used the SSL on my local IIS to avoid all the little script loading pop-ups. And that's what I load here. And what that enables us to do is F5 debugging for the you know, these files that have been deployed as part of the CDN project. You'll see a large number of files. We're going to step through these. But one thing, as you move to production, you can really start to combine these files into single files. So, you know, the core and the caching and the config, for example, are very likely not going to change. So those could be, you know, minimized and configured and combined into a single file to save on some download time. And that's, again, a performance increase. This you would then change to your published CDN URL. So that could be a site in Azure. It could be a well-defined site collection in your environment. However you want to do it, you could change this to pull from some other configuration source. Obviously, lots of options here. And so we'll get rid of the loaders here. And the first thing we'll touch on, actually we'll touch on jQuery. I've added it here. This is just 1.91. It's just here to demonstrate that as jQuery changes, you don't want to worry about the versions and things. If you remember the embedder, we're just calling the straight jQuery.js. So you can come update this file in your CDN with your latest supported jQuery, and you don't have to update any of the deployed user custom actions anywhere. You could also use any of the public CDNs, but those generally have the version numbers attached, so you're going to be back to that problem of needing to update the user custom actions. So going through these, let me actually look at the loader real quick. These are loaded in a certain order. So the order here is the file is the order the files are loaded in. And that matters because obviously as things depend on other things, you want to make sure you're loading them in the order that you can get the stuff. So the first one is just a settings file that defines whatever your global settings are. You'll see there's an active logging level. There's a key here for Azure Insights. I'll look at that in a second with logging. And then there's a configuration URL. And what this is set up right now, and we'll look at the config in a second, is to look for a list that has two columns, title and value. So it's a simple key value pair configuration list. I like configuration lists because you can get to them and edit them, you know, through the browser. You don't have to do anything special or redeploy any code or update web configs, things like that. But you might need to change this, you know, for your needs, of course. So looking at the core, this is really just a core set of functions that I have found useful. I would love for the community to start expanding this into, you know, add functionality here as we need it, right? As people come across various pieces of functionality, I'd love to see them start to get added in here to the core. The other thing it does is create kind of the, this is sort of after the jQuery pattern of creating a $PNP alias to call all this stuff. So we've created a namespace. And then we're actually trying to track a correlation ID. And this is used in the logging. And what this is either going to try and use the correlation ID that's put out into the markup of the page, if it exists, and that's SharePoint Online at this point. Otherwise, it's just going to generate a random GUID, but that GUID will be the same for that entire page load. So it'll kind of help, not as much as maybe correlating with the server correlation ID, but it'll help you gather your logging together. So we'll go down just in order here, settings core. This is the client cache is a simple implementation of using local storage. Local storage, if you're not using it for performance on the client side, really take a look at it. Anytime you're pulling data from the server, especially data that doesn't change often, stuff like user profile information, people's names don't change, people's logins don't change, people's emails don't change often. That can all be cached in local storage. You know, this configuration data, if you look at the configuration client, it's using the caching to see if we've already stored the configuration, because your configuration data rarely changes. So even if you cache these things for as little as, you know, a minute or 5 minutes, it really makes a big difference. That's just a lot fewer HTTP requests that have to go out every time that you're having your users load pages. The same thing applies, and there's no reason you can't use this in your other pieces of custom JavaScript outside of this library, that if you're making a search query for the top 5 news articles and displaying that somehow, or you are, you know, making a request for 100 list items. That can all be cached. That list items and those things very rarely change, even in high traffic sites. High traffic sites are typically consumption over content creation. So the articles and things rarely change, and it's really an opportunity to have a discussion with the business around, do we really need to pull for a new article every 10 seconds? Is it okay for users, and I would say yes, to see articles, you know, 5 minutes after they've been posted, 10 minutes after they've been posted, since the performance gains are so great. The next part is the config. We touched on that briefly. This does a GET request using that REST URL, and then it will load up this config object, and it'll add it to the cache. It's important here to update that query and update these fields if you don't have your title and value field, or if you need to add fields. If you need title, value, and say a language key or something like that, you would need to update this to support that. The example is, again, very simple, just a key value list, but it demonstrates loading up configuration and then storing that in the local cache or local storage so that it's there as folks use it. Going down the list, the next one's going to be logging. I did see a question when I was still looking at the chat on logging. So this logging block here introduces kind of an event-based logging. And it takes a message, a level, a component, and an origin. You could obviously expand this or contract this to take, you know, just a message or to take even more parameters. And then what it'll do is it ensures we have the current user, and this current user method is part of core, but it's also cached. So the first time we're going to incur that penalty of getting the current user, but after that we've got that user's information cached. Again, we talked about that it just doesn't change often, right? And then it builds up a set of event args, which includes that correlation ID, the user login, a timestamp, and the parameters that were passed. Again, this is a great place you can add functionality. And then it fires an event. And how events get subscribed is there's a subscribe method. And so here's a simple example of logging to the console. So we take, based on our level, level 0, we're going to go log info warning error, you know, based on the escalating level. And I'm just writing from the args that message that was passed to the console. Here's a slightly more complicated example. If you sign up for Azure Telemetry, you can get kind of a, it'll give you a JavaScript block to add to your pages. And what I've done is take that block, and that block is actually this whole section of code. And so this is going to do an Azure Telemetry page track, as well as load up all the required scripts and things. And that just came from my account. So you would need to go get this from your account, and you would need to get, you're going to see in there an instrumentation key. So you just need to add that to the settings, and then this will actually just light up for you, and it'll start logging. And it also subscribes an event handler, and so it'll start tracking things to the Azure Application Insights from our logging interface. I've extended this for customers to their custom logging and subscribed an event handler that'll send it to, I've had people that, customers that can't use, you know, Azure for various security reasons, so they'll have a custom web service we log things to. You just have to write another handler, subscribe up to the logging, and then you can use everywhere in your JavaScript code just the PNP logging write, and it'll all go to all these places. Let's see. So the next one is something we've included called Dev Dashboard. Because there is not a development dashboard on Office 365, we added this as kind of an easy optional way to have a dashboard that you can log stuff to and have it visible on, you know, in the browser for developers. So in production in your loader, you probably wouldn't load this file, or you could add some kind of a flag in here. But if this file is included, what it's going to do And this is another example of using the concept of jQuery deferreds, which are kind of not quite full promises, but are quite useful in most cases, to say when we have our configuration and that's ready, we're going to load a style sheet. And so this is something that's been included here in the CDN. And then we're going to do a get of a static file, which is this HTML fragment. We're going to add that fragment to the body, and then we're going to attach some event handlers to it. So this is demonstrates a development dashboard. It also demonstrates dynamic content creation from various fragments, so you don't necessarily have to load everything up immediately as the page is loading. So this is kind of demonstrates how to introduce functionality after the main page has loaded. That can sometimes provide a better experience, especially if it's extra functionality. So you could show, if you're going to have a little thing, say, on the right-hand side with the latest 10 articles or 20 articles, you could show a little loader and then pull in that content later. And that'll kind of speed things up, especially because, you know, most people are just going to try and read the main body. Don't make them wait for all the extra content to load. And then the other thing Development Dashboard does, it demonstrates another subscription to the logging. So now anything that we log is going to get written to our Development Dashboard. So that makes it really easy if you put a good amount of logging into your client-side code and include the Development Dashboard to have great visibility into what's going on. And the last file is just a super simple UI modification sample. I'm hiding the create new site link. This is a really common thing that I've seen, but you can add any number of modifications. And there's a little engine function down here to kind of process all those modifications. This is super simple. You could make this more complicated. You could put more flags in, more conditional logic, things like that. But I just wanted to demonstrate how to do some simple UI modifications. And you can see in here as well, this is some samples to the logging. So that was a lot of talking. Let's go ahead and fire this up.
Yay, it's Joey Test Practice. It's a cool stuff.
Yes. So you'll see here, I've got a breakpoint that was hit because of I've set the remote site as my startup URL, that where I put embedded the loader files. So I get breakpoints and debugging. So here's my page, not a lot going on, but I've got a little icon down here in the bottom right corner. Let me kind of do this so you can see the little icon here. This is, of course, something you could style and move around. This is all controlled by that CSS file we load dynamically. But clicking that toggles the development dashboard. So this will pop out. I've got two things by default, so I show you whatever the correlation ID is we're using, as well as I dump the SP page context info object, which if you're not using is a super helpful object included in the pages. And then I also dump out, by default, local storage. So this shows you all the stuff. These are all SharePoint stored things. And then this shows you as well, here's some stuff from Application Insights. Here's our configuration stuff. Here's my current user information, things like that that are being cached by our code. So you can see that SharePoint itself makes a large use of local storage, but this can help you debug what's going on with local storage. For example, if you change your configuration value, you're not seeing that change, you can check out local storage. Is it still cached? And then here's an example of that logging you can see for the UI mods. Here's, no results because create new site. We'll go to the site contents. You saw the PNP development dashboard refresh. That's the minimum download strategy being handled correctly. And then you'll see here under the UI mods, we actually now, and this is very verbose logging, of course, but I thought it was a good example to show you, hey, we're calling it, we called it, and we've ended our process, and you can see the new site link is done. So that's everything I wanted to show. I know that was super quick. There's a lot more detail in the videos. And I'll hand it back to Vesa now for the closing. Thanks, everybody.
Sounds good. Thanks, Patrick. And once again, we're running slightly out of time, which is such a typical thing. Wonder why. So one of the things what I wanted to quickly have a survey, and let's have an open discussion on things. So first of all, if there's any questions for Patrick, please let's move that discussion to Yammer. One of the things what we seem to be always struggling with these monthly calls is the amount of content and amount of questions. So one of the ideas what we've been kind of toying with the BNP core team members is that would it actually make sense? It's a relatively significant investment from our side, but if you, would it actually make sense to have an open discussion with an audio, with an, let's say monthly, in once a month to talk about these things, so where people can more openly communicate towards us. And that's really what this survey is all about. There's 22 persons answering yes, so the answer is relatively as expected. We can test that after the end of the year or switch of the year, and let's see if we are seeing active memberships or active participation on that one. Let's continue doing that in the future as well, and let's shut it down if that doesn't actually fly. Thanks for answering on that one. We do have also a few different questions which we wanted to actually talk about, and this is more around open discussion in the IAM window, which the recording is hopefully registering as well. So one of the things what we wanted to see is that right now we have these BNP webcasts, and we wanted to do once a week roughly. Most likely we'll reduce the schedule slightly in the future. But if there's any specific things what you would like to see in the BNP webcasts, we would be more than welcome to take your input on the content. So right now we've been talking about introductions on things here and there, maybe going slightly deeper inside of certain topics like the BNP partner pack, how is it actually built, some of the other stuff. SharePoint 2016 plus meme sync, that would be actually a good session. There was a session for TAP customers on that one, but that's a different thing. ALM, that's an absolutely a great topic to talk about within a 30-minute webcast, at least pinpoint the thinking and the main topics. Workflow, good suggestion as well. What does it actually mean? What are the options? And the ALM is getting a lot of feedback. And Patrick is showing his academic way of approaching development. Sorry, Patrick, it's a joke. Test-driven development with SharePoint add-ins. Well, obviously, it would be more around the what would test-driven development mean for the SharePoint. And that could be actually a session with you, Patrick. That wouldn't be a bad idea at all. ALM seems to be absolutely a number one topic on this one, or suggestions, which seems to be driving us on the ALM discussion. One other discussion, if you're open for suggestions to have a chat, and feel free to suggest the BNP webcasts as well. What would you like to see in the BNP provisioning engine? So this is something, obviously, this is one of probably 1/3 of the discussions in Yammer Group is around the BNP provisioning engine. If you don't know what it is it and what is it all about, I would suggest to go to the dev.office.com and have a look on the videos. But if you do have good feedback on this one, something what's missing, something of what isn't there, we would like to get that recorded on the IAM window as well. So publishing pages seems to be a relatively big thing. So essentially making sure that the publishing sites, WCM sites, can be properly provisioned with the BNP provisioning engine. And absolutely, we've been targeting the out-of-the-box theme sites or the theme site template more with that one. Placing fast performance, that's a good one. There are certain things within a SharePoint adding model, or in general, when I think about the remote APIs, that's absolutely one of the challenges what we're having. When you're calling a remote API, you are dependent on the speed of the platform, in this case, Office 365. So as an example, creating a sub-site does take a relatively long time, and that's something what we cannot just simply make any faster in the BNP engine. Well, we can optimize that in some level, but the main wait times are actually getting the calls back from the server side, unfortunately. And that's a fair comment. So if you're doing a site server side site collection, server side provisioning of stuff, that does have a much more significant time frame. The 1,000 times slower seems to be, well, that's a relatively high number. Depends on obviously what you're provisioning. I would be highly amazed, or I would be highly interested in seeing what kind of a template you're provisioning, which takes 1 to 5,000 seconds. What kind of samples you'd like to see in a BMP repository? So this is something what we absolutely are interested as well. So where do we want to actually grow? Obviously, our interest is so there will be unified API samples coming up relatively fast. There's already some Office 365 API samples. The reason why maturity of the BMP is still SharePoint add-ins is because the BMP is all about actual real-life work with the customers. And since we work with the customers, well, majority of the core team members and a lot of the community contributors work with the customers on the SharePoint add-ins, not within the Office 365 API side, we're getting more contributions on that side. But obviously, we would like to have and would like to grow the other sites as well. Governance guidance is essentially that one. And obviously, this is not just about samples. This is also about the guidance and having REST included more specifically there. That's actually a good one. BMP governance engine, content governance. Oh, there's a good discussion going on. And if nothing else, we are getting your discussions for recorded. And there's a good suggestion for Arto. We'd like to have a much better unit tests so that we can actually do more dramatical changes within the engine. And we are absolutely with you on there. That's one of the reasons why we have been forced to delay some of the pull requests because we wanted to have the timeout to have time to really work on the unit testing as well so that we can make sure that the future changes are still working in the latest versions. Discussion is ongoing and we did run out of time again. I don't have a hard stop on the hour. We're 2 minutes past the hour, so I do understand that some people need to drop away from the discussion. But that's actually an interesting the governance engine. Having a generic governance engine using Azure Web Jobs or well console applications in on-premises and then have a plugin model or provide a model for that one to easily extend the existing engine. That's actually a great idea. That's a relatively typical requirement across enterprises. The number one requirement is absolutely the site provisioning and with branding and all of that stuff. Then the second requirement, what they usually have is that they want to have a standardized way of scanning existing sites and content. So having a more reusable module and some solution for that one does make a lot of sense. Because then obviously if it's a generic framework like the existing remote time job framework or the site provisioning framework, if we would build a generic governance framework, we can easily create the proper let's say providers or plugging model, whatever we want to call that, to then plug in the additional bits and pieces. That's actually a great idea. That's a super idea. Most likely, Irvin is going to have that one written for tomorrow morning. That usually happens when there's a good idea. No, just kidding. But great idea. Good. I think we're now almost 5 minutes over the time. Yes, Irvin is almost done already. We're 5 minutes over the time, and I do apologize on the timing, time management. We'll try now that we open up. We'll do the office hours starting from January. So let's do a twice, once a month in between of the month. That's like the fourth week of month or whatever Tuesday on suitable time. Well, I'll put the invites on a proper location. We'll share that with the Yammer groups and all of the other social channel. And at that point, we can actually make, hopefully, this monthly release discussions on time. But thank you, everybody, for joining. Thank you absolutely for your commitment, for your suggestions, for your input, for your pull requests, for your feedback, for your discussions in Yammer, and all of that. Moving into the cloud development model is a journey. And trust me when I'm saying this was this. We do understand how painful it might be, or how fun it might be. It's both. And doing this together with the community is really what we want to do. And we want to make sure that you will be successful in the journey as well. But thank you for your time. And we'll see you hopefully next month. And have a great holiday season, which is coming up as well. Thank you.